Well, hey, my name's Kurt, and I want to thank you for joining us at Crosspoint this weekend here on our digital platform. We are so excited that you are allowing us to come into your home. Tell you what, this is a trying time in our world right now. In fact, as we're going to production for this weekend right now, we just discovered that the United States has just taken over the lead in coronaviruses in our world. And so this thing is very, very real. In fact, it's affecting nearly every aspect of our lives. And so in this room, we have a skeleton crew that's here right now. And our commitment to you is just to continue to bring you some hope, to bring you some encouragement, to be a reflector of the light that God has put in us so that we can kind of brighten your day and that you can be blessed and you can be about blessing other people in your lives as well. Now, one of the cool things that's going to happen as a part of our experience this weekend is we are going to share a meal together. And so I want to ask you to go and grab some bread, a bagel, maybe a pancake if you're having brunch right now, a tortilla, along with some juice, wine, Coca-Cola, whatever your beverage of choice is. Set that aside, and we will come back to that later on in our experience together. And whether you're sitting by yourself, maybe you're with a couple friends or with some immediate family, the cool thing is you're going to be connecting and having this meal with hundreds and hundreds of people through this digital platform. It's going to be a very, very cool experience. So thank you again for letting us come into your home. It's a joy to have you with us today, and we just want to bring you some great music, maybe a few laughs, and so let's go.
Oh, look at this. Thank you so much.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
Are you a vegetarian?
I just can't imagine eating anything with a mother.
Bill was right. You love people like me.
What are people like you? I've never met anyone like you in my entire life.
Broken people.
I don't think you were broken. I know you are a man of conviction. A person who knows the difference between what is wrong and what is right. Try to remember that your relationship with your father also helped to shape those parts. He helped you become what you are.
Well, hey, good morning, and welcome to the neighborhood. In fact, welcome to Team Walter's home right here. This is our special home edition this morning for part of our morning as we continue to dive into how to be a great neighbor. Now, you know, one of the cool things about that scene that we just saw is there's something powerful that Fred Rogers did when he took a moment to eat with Lloyd. There's something powerful about eating together. You know, you can live next to someone for years and years and years and yet never really know them. You can work next to someone, you can be in the same office for years and yet never really know who they are. And so there's something powerful that takes place when we take the time to have a meal together or to share coffee together or happy hour together, where we really get connected and our relationship goes to an entirely different place. So it's great to have you joining us today, whether you're here from the north side of Indy community or beyond. I know we've had a number of people checking in from states in the general Midwest area, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. If you're chiming in from outside our area, we would love to have you jump on one of our social feeds and tell us where you're from, because we'd love to have a chance to communicate with you. Now, how many of us like food? All right, just a few of you. All right, how about this? How many of us love food? I love food. Food is one of my favorite things. In fact, I think America has a love infatuation with food. Now, as we think about the coronavirus that we're dealing with right now, we think about food. I saw a really interesting take on this the other night on one of my favorite shows, which is Late Night with Seth Meyers. And he was talking about something we can learn from our global community in Korea as we think about some of the testing that we're going to be experiencing here in the United States and how ultimately it brings us back to food. Take a look at this.
Patients never get out of the car.
They come in, they fill out questionnaires, find out whether or not they're in a risk category, and while sitting in their cars, the nurses will swab their nostrils and their throats, take samples, and then the results will come in within 2 to 3 days.
This could be a model for countries like the U.S. that are just starting to deal with their first coronavirus cases.
Of course it should be a model for us. Look, we might be bad at stuff like healthcare, education, gun control, climate change, housing, criminal justice, and gender equality, but nobody is better than us at drive-thrus. I mean, come on.
My word, we love food, don't we? We love drive-thrus. America loves drive-thrus. And it just shows us how much food is a central part of our culture. Now, not only is food a central part of our culture, we have eating competitions. That's how much we love food. In fact, I don't know if the name Joey Chestnut rings a bell for you. I think I heard an audible groan through the lens here just a moment ago. You may know Joey Chestnut. He is the world famous hot dog eater. He's won the world championship hot dog competition. There are way more competitions than just hot dog eating. In fact, here's a few that I discovered this past week. We have, actually right here in Indianapolis, we had the World Ice Cream Eating Championship. This was at the State Fair earlier this past year. We also have the World Baking Eating Championship. All the guys are doing a corporate grunt, you know. We love bacon. We love bacon eating. How about St. Elmo's Shrimp Eating Championship right here again in Indianapolis? That's Joey Chestnut pounding some shrimp. And then here's a very relevant one right here for this time of year. This is the World Peep Eating Championship. Get this, 355 peeps in 3 minutes. How do you do that? And why would you want to do that? And then last, I think this one is maybe the most disgusting of all. This is the National Mayonnaise Eating Competition. All right, this lady, she pounded almost 4 jars of mayonnaise in 3 minutes. Incredible. I think that we love eating. We have this infatuation with eating. And here's what I want us to think about today. I want us to think about this reality that, you know, I think one of the best ways that we can make a difference in our world is through eating. In fact, it's one of the ways that we can accomplish Jesus' mission that he calls us to. Now, we're in the series called How to Be a Great Neighbor. Today, we're in week 4, and we've been looking at the mission that Jesus calls us to. Now, this isn't just a Crosspoint mission, though it is our mission. It's how do we help people find their way to God, but this is also a mission that Jesus invites you into. If you're a follower of Jesus, if you're somebody who's received from Jesus, he says, hey, I want you to help other people experience the same thing you've experienced from me. I want you to help them find their way to God. So we've really been trying to equip you so that you can better be equipped to not just hope that your friends find their way to God, but you can help them find their way to God. Now, this is nothing new. In fact, we can go all the way back to Genesis 12, and we find Abraham, where God says to him, hey, Abraham, you're going to be a blessing. I'm going to bless you, but you're going to be blessed. You can be a blessing to others. And so you're going to take that blessing and bless others. And then we fast forward to Jesus, where we see the accounts of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We see that everywhere Jesus went, life was better, and Jesus was always a blessing. In fact, one of the best ways to be a blessing to people is to walk out these strategies that we see in the life of Jesus. We've called these the blessed strategies. They're things we see in the life of Jesus. We've been talking about these over the past 3 weekends. In fact, 2 weekends ago, we talked about B, which is begin with prayer. We always saw Jesus would begin with prayer. God, who do you want me to be a blessing to today? And then last weekend, we looked at the power of listening. Very, very practical walkouts that we gave last weekend. If you missed either of these weekends, you can go to our podcast page and you can get caught up with the series. And then today, we're going to look at the third blessed practice, which is eating. Everybody loves to eat. I love to eat. You love to eat. So let's go to the dining room and we're going to explore what this looks like. Well, hey, welcome to our table here at the Walters home. You know, this table right here, I actually built with my own 2 hands, partly because I love to build things and then partly because this is a very, very sacred place in our home. This is one of the places that we gather with our family. This is one of the places we gather with extended family and with our friends. Now, there is actually substantial research out there on the importance of kids and parents eating together. Many, many researchers agree on this, that when kids and parents eat together, their kids actually establish healthier eating patterns for later on in their lives. They also have discovered that it reduces eating disorders among kids, even into their adult lives. It's been linked to students that have less alcohol use, cigarette use, drug use. There's better self-esteem, lower depression, better grades, higher test scores. All of this comes because of parents and children eating together. Now, I tell you what, I know it's frustrating to be in this stay-at-home quarantine that we're in right now, but I tell you what a great opportunity for us to really maximize the dinner table and build into our families. Now, when we look at the life of Jesus, we look at the gospel accounts of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we see something really fascinating. You know, if I were to ask you, what are the most important moments in Jesus's life? What are some of the most important things that he did? You might say, the miracles are really important because that shows us that he's God, that he has supernatural power. You might say, the walking on the water, that was pretty cool. Maybe even him dying on the cross. All those are very, very powerful moments. But I tell you what, part of the way that Jesus changed the world was through eating. Eating. I mean, think about it. How many of Jesus' significant moments happened in a setting around a meal? How about his first miracle? Where was that at? It was around a meal, right? It was at a wedding feast where he turned water into wine. How about when he turned the two fish and five loaves into a feast for over 5,000 men plus women and children? What was the context? It was a meal. Even the night before he was crucified, when Jesus gathered his closest friends together around a table, he commemorates it with what? He commemorates that evening, that Last Supper, with this meal. After he dies and he rises from the grave, one of the very first things he does, he goes out and gets a couple of his friends and they have breakfast on the beach. Again, it's a meal moment. Eating was very, very important to Jesus. It was very, very important to the first century culture. See, eating was almost like saying, I want to be associated with you. When you invite somebody into your table, it's like, I'm including you in my social circle. And this is why when Jesus did these outrageous things, like eating with some of the lowest and most despised people in the culture, it just caused the religious leaders to go through the roof. They're like, no, you should not be eating with them. You need to be eating with the dignified people. We see a great example of this in Matthew chapter 9. In fact, Matthew is writing this, but it's also an interesting account because he includes himself in the story. This is where he first meets Jesus. Matthew 9 says, as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. So Jesus was walking along. He comes along a tax collection booth, and there sits Matthew. Now, we don't know if Jesus had had an encounter with Matthew before. We don't know if it was in this moment that he just decided to strike up a conversation and got to know him in this moment. What we do know is in the midst of this conversation, Jesus says two words that forever changed the trajectory of Matthew's life. And there are two words that Jesus invites you and I to as well. He says to Matthew, he says, Matthew, I want you to follow me. Follow me. Now, this is remarkable. Matthew was considered the scum of the earth. Matthew was a tax collector. He was working for the Roman government. I mean, Matthew was not only collecting taxes for the Roman government, but he was padding his own pockets because he could collect however much he wanted for himself, and nobody was going to do anything about it. So he was like the hated of the hated among this first century culture. And so when the religious leaders see Jesus say to Matthew, Matthew, come follow me, they just think this is outrageous. They are shocked. They totally don't get it. But see, Matthew says yes. Now remember, in that moment, Matthew, he hadn't written the book of Matthew yet. He hadn't put his account together of Jesus' life. He hadn't even seen Jesus' death and resurrection yet. In fact, this was really, in Matthew's life, the early stages of him making his way into relationship with God because of Jesus' invitation. And yet, think about it. What was the very first thing that Jesus invited him to do? He didn't say, hey, Matthew, we got to get you in a small group. Didn't say that at all. He didn't say, Matthew, you need to memorize the laws. I mean, you need to really be versed in these. Didn't say that. Those are very good things. What's the very first thing he did with Matthew? He said, Matthew, let's go eat together. In fact, he invited himself to Matthew's house. Now, they ate together at Matthew's house. What's crazy is when Jesus got there, guess who else is there? Other tax collectors, other people who were referred to as sinners. Now, in the religious establishment, they would kind of use the word sinners as this derogatory term to refer to people who were not religious in any way. It was almost this like this term that referred to people who had these explicit lives. I mean, people who were prostitutes, people who were users or dealers, people who were, you know, tax collectors. And so the religious leaders are outraged. They just think this is scandalous that he's eating with these people. But take a look at what happens next. It says, when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Now, I just kind of picture Jesus sitting back. He's maybe eating his Ale Emporium wings, you know, at the corner of the table, enjoying a beverage. And he overhears the Pharisees asking this question of all these tax collectors. And Jesus says, on hearing this, it says, Jesus says, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Now, he's not calling the Pharisees healthy. What he's really saying is all of us are sick. We actually all are in need of a doctor. And then Jesus goes on and quotes this Old Testament passage, and he's really kind of saying to these guys, hey, why don't you go back and go back to your studies a bit? He says, go back and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Now, Jesus is kind of digging at the Pharisees a bit right here. You know, they kind of thought they were the experts. I mean, they like to form all these public, you know, rituals and all these, this hoopla to kind of show how spiritual they were. They're keeping all the rules, but you know what they didn't do? They didn't pay attention to the poor. They didn't pay attention to the vulnerable. They didn't pay attention to the marginalized. Totally ignored them. I mean, the fact that you're sitting at home right now and we're coming to you through this digital platform, you're actually paying attention to the marginalized. You're paying attention to the vulnerable. You're actually paying attention to those who can't help themselves by doing the social distancing that we need so desperately right now in our community. So I think if Jesus were here right now, you know what I think he'd say to us? I think, first of all, he'd be like, hey, well done. Well done. It's great to see you attending service at Crosspoint. Way to go. But I think he'd say to us, hey, don't just show up for church. I want you to also show up in the people's lives around you, your neighbors. All right? I want you to look and pay attention to how you can bless them. Because see, if we just show up for church, but we don't show up in the lives of the people around us, guess who we're like? We're just like the Pharisees. We're just going through a bunch of rituals instead of actually doing the blessing that Jesus calls us to do. What Jesus is saying right here is he's saying, hey, I want you to prioritize people. I want you to make people the main priority in your life. Think of it this way. You know, if you were to want to move an acquaintance to a friendship, what strategy would you use to make that happen? I mean, you'd use a meal, right? I mean, think about it. Some of you might be single and you're looking to, you know, maybe arrange a date. Maybe you used to date. Maybe before you got married, you dated a number of people. Guys, you might see a girl and you're like, man, I would really like to move that acquaintance with her to a really good friendship. All right, so what do? You go ask her out, right? And if you really are interested in her, you ask her out to like a really nice meal. And so if you're in sales, you kind of do the same thing, right? If you want to land a sale, you wine and dine. Why do you wine and dine? Because you know you're not necessarily selling the product. You're wanting to move that acquaintance with this contact to a relationship, a significant relationship, because you're really selling a relationship, not a product. I love how the great theologian Henry Nouwen once put it. This is awesome. He said, when we invite friends for a meal, we do much more than offer them food for their bodies. We offer friendship, fellowship, good conversation, intimacy, and closeness. When we say, help yourself, take more, don't be shy, have another glass, we offer our guests not only our food and our drink, but also ourselves. A spiritual bond grows, and we become food and drink for one another. See, there's something really powerful that happens when we eat together. You know, maybe for you this week, one of your next steps is just to show up and really be present around the dinner table, because this is the option we have. We have a lot of time to do that this week. Maybe for you, it's showing up and being in a Zoom window in dinner with a friend. Or maybe you still have some small groups of friends that you're circulating with, and it's just saying, okay, who needs to have a connection this week? Who can I get with that God's put in my heart to be a blessing to them? Who do I want to move an acquaintance friendship to a deeper level of friendship with this week? You're gonna have to be creative on it. You're gonna have to think, how do I do this with our social distancing? But it can be done. I've heard some awesome stories this week of couples getting together with other couples through a Zoom window, having a dinner party together. I've heard of some awesome, seen some great photos from happy hours together. These are the places where we become a part of each other's lives. And so I just want you to think this week of who God may be putting in your mind to do that with. In fact, I want you to take out your card that we've been using over these past few weeks. This is mine right here. It's got some names, some places of people that God's just kind of been putting on my heart. And I want you to just circle or add a name to this list this week. Who is that relationship that is maybe at an acquaintance level right now that you are really feeling it's time to move that to a friendship? And just write that on your card or circle their name. And then I want you to be intentional this week on how you can make that happen. All right, now we're going to move on to the fourth blessed practice here, which I'm really excited about, because this is where we can maybe really get some traction this week. And before we take a look at this, here's a special message from our mayor, Scott Fadness.
Good morning to the Cross Point community, and thank you for being such a vibrant part of the Fishers City. I've been asked to talk a little bit about what it is that each and every one of you can do on behalf of our community through these trying times. Our faith leaders in our community have been outstanding, and I can't thank them enough for all the work that they've done and the leadership that they've provided. But each and every one of us plays a role in ensuring the outcome, the positive outcome of our community. First and foremost, be a good neighbor. If you know an individual who might be isolated, a senior, someone with a predisposed condition that might be afraid to go outside, call them, knock on their door, make sure that they're okay, buy them groceries. It's the little things that can make a huge difference. Economically, we know that there are lots of businesses, small businesses, your neighbors that are struggling financially during this difficult time. Make a point to grab some to-go food from one of your local favorite restaurants here in our community. And finally, and probably most importantly, these are trying times and people are anxious and they're struggling. We've seen domestic violence runs go up. We've seen suicide attempts go up. We want to make sure that people are taking care of themselves and their own mental health. The simple act of calling someone when you're stressed out to talk through your challenges, to calling a friend that you haven't had a long conversation with in some time, take the opportunity to connect with other human beings in this very difficult time and rely upon your faith as you see fit. I know that with the cooperation and collaboration of all of our residents in our community, that we will make it through this and we will take care of one another and be a shining example of not only what a city can be, but what a community can be. Take care. God bless.
Oh man, let's thank Mayor Fadness for joining us this weekend. Great, great, great to have him with us as we are joining together through our digital platform here at Crosspoint. Now, today we are going to go on, not only from our third blessed practice, we're going to go on to the fourth blessed practice. And so we've talked about the importance of beginning with prayer. This is always where Jesus began. And then we talked about the importance of listening to the location of people. And then third, we looked just a few minutes ago at the value and the importance of eating together. There's amazing things that happen when we eat together. And when you do these three, then you begin to discover the fourth blessed practice, which is serving others. Now, when we look at the life of Jesus, I tell you what, this is written all over his life. In fact, I want us to take another look at a meal that Jesus had. And he gathers his friends together, and he wants to model something for them on this whole idea of serving. Take a look at this in John 13. It was just before Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. Now, I just want to pause for a moment and make sure we understand what's going on right here. This is Jesus, right? This is Jesus who with one word, calmed a storm. This is Jesus who raised Lazarus, his friend, from the dead. This is Jesus who healed the eyes of a blind man. This is Jesus who is God in the flesh. This is Jesus who created all things. This is Jesus, the one and only Son of God. And yet in this moment, he sets all of his power, all of his position aside. And what does he set it aside for? He sets it aside to take on the role of a servant. In fact, he even said one time, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And so we see him right now in this moment kneeling down. And he's kneeling down. He's lowering himself to the lowest rung on the ladder. See, washing someone's feet, this was a must-do in this culture. It was critical. And it was always assigned to the lowest person in terms of social standing in the room. Because, see, washing people's feet was a dirty, dirty job. Now, I'm not talking like dirty job today, washing people's feet. I'm talking like first century dirty job. All right, I mean, think about this for a moment. These people, they didn't have, you know, nail clippers. They didn't have pedicures. So, I mean, you're talking ingrown, overgrown toenails. They're walking around in sandals without socks and dusty, dung-filled roads with trash and sewer, you know, running amok. And typically at a meal, you would recline on the floor, and there was a low table, so you would kind of recline with your feet at table level. So it was critical that your feet would be washed anytime you approached the table for dinner. Now just picture this moment. Just picture how awkward this must have been. Everybody's gathered, right? They're beginning to sit at the table, right? And everybody's wondering, who's gonna wash our feet? I mean, we're all kind of a big deal right here, right? And they probably did what most of us would do. I mean, what would you do when the awkward moment comes about? You don't make eye contact with anybody, right? You're like, oh, I'm not gonna make eye contact. I mean, if I make eye contact, I might be the one that has to step in and do the job. So nobody's making eye contact with each other. And the awkwardness escalates off the charts the moment Jesus gets up and he goes and he puts a towel around his waist and he grabs a basin of water and he begins to wash their feet. Now, this isn't just about the dirty job that Jesus is doing right here that astounds them. This is also a shame and honor culture. And what I mean by that is this culture was really big on understanding, you know, people in the context of a social setting who had the highest honor. And when you had the highest honor in a social setting, you had the most credibility. And when you had the most credibility, you had the highest honor. So that means you were the one that got served. You didn't bow down to serve other people. But Jesus here, he bows down and washes everyone's feet. I think this is maybe why Peter was so abrasive in his kind of response to Jesus right here. Take a look at verse 6. It says, he, meaning Peter, he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand. No, Peter said, you shall never wash my feet. Now think about this for a moment. All right, let's just say you have a dinner party at your house this week. All right, maybe not this week, maybe in a couple months when we're off our stay-at-home orders. All right, you have a dinner party at your house. These are friends that you've been looking forward to having over. These are people who are held in high regard in the community. These are people who are highly respected. After dinner, one of them gets up, goes to your restroom, and they never come back. And you get a little worried. And so you go back there to make sure everything's okay. You're like, hey, everything all right in there? Which is a little awkward in of itself to have to do that, right? But when you go back there, you discover they are down on their hands and knees washing and cleaning your bathroom. They're cleaning like the metal bolts that hold your toilet to the ground. You know, that dirty place right there. And you are horrified. Right, I mean, talk about uncomfortable, right? That's what's going on with Peter right here. Because see, let's be honest. If we're going to serve somebody in the way Jesus modeled for us, we're not going to wash each other's feet. That's irrelevant to us today. When we do that, we're just jumping through a whole bunch of religious hoops. Jesus wants us to do something relevant to where people are. And so in this moment, Peter's awkwardness jumps up about 200%. And here's how Jesus responds to him. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then Lord Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean." Now, Peter didn't fully understand what was going on right here. All right, now you and I get this because we know the rest of the story. We know in a few hours after this meal, Jesus is going to be dragged out. He's going to be humiliated. He's going to be beaten within an inch of his life. All right, they're going to take the proverbial crown off his head as a king, and they're going to put a crown of thorns on his head. He's going to take on the role of a servant, and he's going to lay his life down for you and for me, and he's going to take nails in his hands and nails in his feet. And as a result of that, he fully takes on your and my shame, all of it. And also as a result of that moment, he takes on your shame and my shame and paves a pathway so that you and I can come back into relationship with our Heavenly Father. Now, here's what's going on in this moment that I want us to see. See, when he's washing these feet in the upper room right here, all right, this isn't just like some nice deed. All right, there's something way deeper going on. Take a look at verse 12. It says, "When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightfully so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet." I mean, he's speaking metaphorically right here, right? I mean, he's basically saying, hey, I want you to model this kind of servanthood with others. And then he lands this application right here. Here's what he says. He says, "I have set you an example of what it means to serve, that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him." And then he lands this last phrase right here, which is huge. It hugely ties into everything we've been talking about. He says, "Now that you know these things, you will be," and what's the word right there? He says, "You will be blessed." He says, "You will be blessed if you do them." You know what? When you do these, not only will you be blessed, but you will bless people in your life. Now, here's the thing. To bless the world, we have to not only be in the world, but we have to be among the world. All right, now I know that sounds like an obvious thing, right? But let me ask you the question. See, it's so easy to fall into this trap where we just find ourselves serving our family and friends all the time, right? I mean, I really want you to think about this with me. What percent of the people that you serve on a regular basis are your family and friends that are already convinced? What percent of the people that you serve on a regular basis, you're like, oh, I'm serving, what percentage of those are already in the kingdom? I mean, it's not that you shouldn't be serving them, but if we're only serving the people that are in the kingdom, we're never going to be a part of helping people outside the kingdom find their way to God. See, there's this trend among Christians where the longer you've been a Christian, the longer you've been a Christ follower, the less friends that you have that are outside of the faith. And see, with Jesus, we see that he served people who were both pretty much like him and pretty much not like him at all. And so we've got to wrestle with these realities. Who are you reaching out to and blessing? Who are you serving? What are the relationships in your life that you're fostering with people that are absolutely not like you? And see, sometimes we know there are needs. We know there's needs right outside our front door in our cul-de-sac, on our street, in our neighborhood, even in the Zoom window that we're interfacing with every single day. But sometimes the needs make us uncomfortable. So who is it where you live? Who is it in the Zoom window that you were in today? The Zoom window you'll be in tomorrow. And how can you begin to pray, God, give me opportunities and listen to where they are? People that are outside the kingdom of God. Find opportunities to eat with them. I don't know if that's a coffee over the Zoom window, happy time over the Zoom window, maybe a virtual meal. I don't know. Be creative. And then as a result, look for opportunities to serve them. I guarantee you will begin to usher them into what it means to see and be in the kingdom. This is how we live out the Jesus mission. And not only hope that our friends and neighbors find their way to God, but we actually actively help them find their way to God. I'm telling you, there are so many people in your life this week. You are going to come across so many people this week that are looking for hope, that are looking for something to grab onto, that are looking for some kind of bright light, some kind of hope in their life, something that they can just tangibly kind of grab onto that will help them see that things are going to be okay. And see, I just feel like this is one of those moments where God's like throwing this like nice slow pitch up for us. He's just like setting this up so that we can be a blessing, so that we can actually be the kind of people he's put us in the world to be. And I guarantee you, if you pray, if you will listen, if you'll find ways to connect over a cup of coffee or eating through a virtual window, whatever that looks like for you, and you look for opportunities to serve, take a meal, whatever that means, I guarantee you, you will be amazed at what God does in their life this week. You'll be amazed. In fact, Mayor Scott, he gave us a few examples here just a few minutes ago. I'm gonna just kind of recast these here. Three actionable items I want to encourage you to kind of lay into and walk out this week. All right, how do we leverage these this week? Because see, here's the thing. This COVID virus is not a sprint. It is a marathon. I mean, we've just discovered, even with a call with the mayor today, with all of our faith leaders, he said, hey, we're still, you know, approaching the peak. We're probably 3+ weeks out from the peak of this in our community. And yet we already see the way it's impacting people right here in our community, in our workplaces. So three ways you can just walk this out this week. Number one, order food from your favorite restaurant this week, at least one time. Take carry out, order carry out. You know, and you might say, well, how's that being a good neighbor? How's that blessing people? Listen, the owner or the manager, the workers of that restaurant, they may be your neighbors. One of the best ways we can be a neighbor is to support some of our local businesses. All right, and so grab some to go this week. Very, very easy thing. You have to eat at least 21 times in the next 7 days. Number two, check in on seniors and the vulnerable in your neighborhood. Check in, knock on their door, put a call, a text to them, make sure they're okay. Now the cool thing is Mayor Fadness communicated to our faith leaders today. He said, hey, you guys are doing a great job on this. He said, City Hall has not had the volume of calls we expected from our seniors in our community because our neighborhoods are doing their job, so keep it up. It's one of the ways to be a great neighbor. And then number three, be a good friend. Make a call to a friend this week. I mean, one of the greatest concerns we have here at Crosspoint, our faith leaders have across our community, our mayor has, is the depression and some of the mental health impact that we're going to see as the economy tanks and as businesses begin to teeter, as we wonder how we're going to provide for our families, as we're beginning to socially isolate. And so if God puts somebody on your mind, a friend, just call them, put a call into them. You can even say, hey, I don't know why I'm calling you. I just thought about you today. And maybe that was a prompt for me to say, hey, how are you doing? What can I do for you? How can I pray for you? Be a good friend this week. We are in a war on social isolationism right now. Three very, very easy ways we can be a great, great neighbor this week. Now, as I kind of wrap this up, can I tell you guys one more story? I mean, you mind if I share one more connect with you before we wrap up? I think this will help merge this whole idea of eating together and serving into one picture. There's a story that went viral, I think it was about 2 years ago, Thanksgiving. It happened right here. It went viral all across the country. It happened right here, just north of where I'm sitting right now, right up in Noblesville, just a couple miles north of us. And it was about a young man named Eric and an elderly woman named Jan. And both of them were alone at breakfast time. And so it was a Thursday morning, and Eric said, you know, I'm going to go to McDonald's, and I don't have anybody to go with, so I'm just going to go, and I'm going to sit, and I'm going to eat by myself this morning. And Jan, who was 70 years old, she thought the same thing. So she walked out of her house, she went to the same McDonald's, and she sat all alone eating her breakfast that morning. So on two different sides of that dining room in this McDonald's in Noblesville sat Jan and Eric eating by themselves all alone. When Jan had an idea, she thought, I see Eric over there. She didn't know his name. I'm going to walk over, and she did. She approached him and said, hey, do you mind if I come have breakfast with you? And Eric immediately said, yeah, absolutely. And so Jan walked across the room, picked up her food. Eric got up, grabbed another chair, so they both had a place to sit. In fact, here's a photo. We've got a photo that you can kind of check out of that moment. And they sat there for 45 minutes together. 45 minutes. Complete strangers. And they found out that they both like art. They started talking about their love for art. And Jan shared about her church community, how valuable and life-giving that is for her. And Eric shared about his girlfriend and his son. He even said, hey, Jan even shared some of her life wisdom with me. She said, hey, you got to be careful to not judge anybody because you just don't know what kind of day they might be having. And when they were finished, they exchanged phone numbers. They promised to stay in touch. And Eric walked Jan to a car. man, don't you love stories like that? My word. I mean, when I was reading this news story, the news story said that you couldn't have found two people that had more opposite lives that came together in that moment. And yet, there was a bond that was formed when they had a meal. And I think what makes this simple story so profound, and maybe what even made it go viral, is that it's so rare. I just thought, man, what if we made this story common in our community? I mean, what would this town look like if in all of our McDonald's and Portillo's and Houlihan's, of course, you know, in a few months when we go back to our normal activities, what if we made those hubs where people actually cared and listened to one another? What if we made our homes right now and our virtual windows where we maybe have meals virtually with one another? What if we made those hubs where people actually listened and cared? I think that in the process, I mean, we would help a whole lot of people find their way to God. Heavenly Father, man, what an amazing picture of what it means for us to just love and connect with people around us. God, I want to thank you for this simple gift you gave us of eating, this picture of serving that can be used to change lives. And I just pray that over these next few moments, you would put on our minds people, maybe places around us, neighborhoods, restaurants, people in our Zoom windows, people you want us to pray for, people you maybe want us to have a virtual meal with, people we need could come along and listen to, we could engage with, knowing that that engagement may change their trajectory for eternity. And it's going to change us as well. And in the midst of that, we may even help them find their way to you. Thank you for doing this in us. Thank you for chasing us down. Thank you for fighting for us like any father fights for his kids. Father, I just pray that you'd give us a vision of what you would like to do through every single one of our lives right now. If every single one of us were to intentionally just set out to bless one person, to serve one person this week in some unique way, God, just give us a vision of the ripple effect that would begin to have across our community. And so we just pray that your Holy Spirit would work in and through us and empower us, even in the midst of this difficult season, God. We know you are alive and at work, and we want to be a part of it.
Well, hey, welcome back to our table here. I've got my family with us right now. And man, what a great song that reminds us of how Jesus fought for us. And not only did he fight for us, but he served us. In fact, because of the way he served us, this is one of the reasons that we are compelled to serve and bless others. We're going to share in this meal together. So if you want to go ahead and grab the bread, the crackers, whatever you set aside at the beginning of service, along with the juice, you can grab that and bring that into this moment. And we have pancakes. And so Jesus, he just took the common bread off of his table. And as he began to talk about this, he began to connect how this was a physical item that became very spiritual in that moment. And he talked about how his body was about to be broken for his friends and for the world. Now, they didn't fully understand that at the time because they didn't know what was coming, but they nonetheless took the piece of bread. At the same time, he took the cup from the table. And he made a spiritual connection to the cup. He said, every time you drink this wine, in his case, we're drinking juice right here. He says, every time you drink this cup, I want you to remember my blood, which was shed for you. See, there always had to be a giving of one's life source in order for there to be a forgiveness. And so Jesus, he gave of his blood so the rest of us could be reconciled to God, so the rest of us could find our way to God. And it's this blessing that, again, compels us to go and be a blessing to others and help others find their way to God. And so we're going to share in this moment together, and whether you're with your family, whether you're with friends right now, whether you're sitting by yourself just watching this in your living room, I want you to know that you're connected to our entire community sharing in this moment as we share the Eucharist, the Mass, the Lord's Supper, the Communion. Whatever you refer to this meal as, this is a meal that connects us to Christ. Now, this is also a meal that is for those who have received Christ into their life. And so if you haven't received Jesus, if you haven't taken that step of faith, I mean, we're so excited you're tuning in today. But I want you to know these elements really are just bread and juice or wine. But for those who have received Christ, this is a remembrance of celebrating the body and the blood of Christ. And maybe for you, you want to receive that for the very first time today. And so if that's where you are, as you receive the bread and as you receive the cup, maybe this be the moment where you receive the grace of Christ and make this your first communion. So let's go ahead and grab the bread together. Jesus said, "Take and eat, this is my body." And then he took the cup and he said, "This is my blood, which is shed for the forgiveness of sins." And so, cheers, let's drink together. Man, I don't know that there's a better setting than around a table when we're eating together to remember what Christ has done for us. Hey, we've got one more song for you. Oh, this is a song that reminds us that Jesus, he closed the gap for us, and he allowed us to be awakened to the people around us so that we can help share what's happening in our lives with others through being a blessing. So let's sing together.